Welcome to another episode of Scoring Compass Promotions Podcast. Tonight's guest is, you are giving a run for, right now, the winner of Best Dressed Guest, Writer's Brother Bill Atkinson Sr. We got to add the senior part in, not saying you're old, but with your son in masonry too.
Yeah.
If we don't add the senior, people will get...
I'm William A. and he's William M. And the senior came about by Grand Lodge trying to distinguish between us. They put the senior and junior in.
Really?
Yeah, I had nothing to do with that.
I had no idea.
Grand Lodge actually started adding it in when they sent us stuff, so they could keep track of it.
Well, my thanks to Grand Lodge, because I was always, without that, because that's how you guys are on my phone, I got senior and junior, so
yeah,
I know which one I'm talking to.
Yeah, exactly. So.
I should have, if I'd known that, I would have gone like A and M or something.
Yeah, there you go. That would work, yeah.
But you've got, you're speaking of your son, who's also a very active Mason, and then your, which I want to talk to you about, your granddaughters are very active in Masonic Order, which you've been actively involved in, promoting. But first, I want to talk to you about your Masonic history. You've been a Mason for 52 years.
Yep.
You are a Right Worshipful Brother.
Right.
You are currently the secretary
of Thistle Lodge.
By past master, right? You've been heavily involved both in masonry at the local, at the lodge level, and also the district level and the provincial level. How did you first become involved in masonry?
Well, my father was a mason. I grew up on a dairy farm in Malden Township, and it was my, I had a sister, and a younger sister and a younger brother. My dad signed my application when I was 21 years old. And what did we do with the lights?
We are out of lights.
The emergency light just came on.
I think a breaker might have gone out.
Either that or there looks like they're doing some work across the road. There was some stuff being put in.
This has become like a scary movie. Like, I don't know. Because now it's dark. I can't see. Well, I mean, this place is haunted, so. Well, yeah, the emergency light is on over here.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to keep this going, because I can still see you. We're casting shadows.
So when my dad did my application, and so I joined when I was 21, I had two of them would belong to our lodge, and one uncle from Michigan. And so when I was initiated in 1968 at Thistle Lodge, and then I immediately started into the chairs that December, and I did every chair except the junior steward on my way through. And then I was master in December 27th, 1975. And I served the 1 year, and I've never been master again. So that was thankful. I didn't join any more in masonry for 25 years. I had four kids, two daughters and two sons, and I was heavily involved in the minor hockey, and I coached travel team hockey for 10 years. I coached house league hockey. I was a volunteer fireman in our community, and my wife was the president of minor hockey at the time. So I spent a lot of time with family. So I did all the family stuff when the kids were young. I played hockey myself. I played goal for 35 years. I've played for the Amherstburg Old Timers, and we played in almost every arena in Ontario. We played in Florida. We played in Switzerland. We've had a great time at that time. And once the kids got out of high school, then I invited my sons when they were 21 to join. So Bill joined, he was the oldest, when he was 21, and then Stephen joined when he was 21. And together, the three of us joined Scottish Rite together. So we went through Scottish Rite, all the way through Scottish Rite together. My youngest son was, he wasn't married at the time, so he went through, by the time he was 23, he was a Shriner. He had done the Lodge Prefecture, Rose Qual, became a 32nd, and then went right into Shrine by the time he was 32. I hadn't joined Shrine yet, And it was about 5 years later that I joined the Shriners, and he fezzed me. So that was quite a one of the firsts of enshrined for the son to fez the father, which was quite nice. We have pictures on our wall of that taking place. I was asked in 2002 if I would help Grand Lodge with their 150th anniversary committee. One of the brothers from this area asked me, they were looking for somebody that they thought would have the time to do it. So for the anniversary, the 150th anniversary was in 2005. So we met in Hamilton every other month for almost 3 years to bring about the program for the 150th celebration. We were in charge of, we had a budget, and we brought in pins, we designed pins, we brought them in to sell. We developed we had a play. We developed a play. It was called Then and Now, and it transitioned the 150 years of masonry in Ontario. So I volunteered for to be on the play when we were at our meetings, and Ray Worshall Rudd, Ed Carey was the district deputy at the time, and he used to go with me to down to Hamilton to the meetings as company, and we ended up convincing Ed to be in the play too. So we took that play, we started in Kingston, and then we went to Simcoe, which was the home of our first Grand Master. Then we took it up to Thunder Bay, and we had a great time in all of it. And we finally ended up the last one at the Grand Lodge during the Grand Lodge sessions. And I met a lot of Masons during that time from all over Ontario, which brought me into connections with them. And it was really learned a lot about Masonry in other areas and what goes on. And I must say, we did bring the whole 150th in under budget, and we put $25,000 away for the 175th for them to have something to start with. So that's in Grand Lodge's treasury for them to do. So we were quite happy that worked out. So from there, by doing this, I was invited to be on the Benevolence Committee at Grand Lodge, which was probably the most important committee that there is benevolence. And that was really, really eye-opening to me, because what happens is most of the brethren need benevolence because of family health emergencies, whether it be themselves, their wives, their kids, or they lost their job and needed some help. And it was really satisfying to help them, but it was also quite heartbreaking to see what everybody was going through. And so I was on that committee for 4 years, and we used to go to Hamilton twice a year and go through all the applications and then sort out how much money we would allot to each one. And but I still think that's the most important committee on Grand Lodge. So from there, my social brother Gary Atkinson put me on Grand Lodge for 1 year. I was replacing a person who had stepped aside, and so I started there. And then the next year, Most Worshipful Brother Alan J. Petrosar was our Grand Master. Now Alan, he asked me to take over a committee, a brand new committee that Grand Lodge had never had before, but they'd been talked about, and that was the Youth Initiative Committee. And I says, "Oh, you know, I coached a lot of young people. I think I have young grandchildren, and I think I could communicate with them." So he gave me that committee, and right now that committee is still going and it's growing, and it's a big part of Masonry right now is our involvement with the Boys at DeMolay and the Rainbow for Girls. I went to my first meeting. That was in July. And the first meeting I attended was the Rainbow's Grand Assembly. It was at the University of Toronto, And our lights are back on.
We're back.
And I didn't know a soul. Didn't know what was going on, but Most Worshipful Brother Petrosar had given me a check for $1,000 out of his discretionary funds to present to them. Well, after I presented them with the check, everybody knew me. I was the hit of the day. So, and I still have close relationships with everybody I met during that time. I still attend their grand assemblies in Burlington because my granddaughters now are part of it. The Rainbow for Girls are young girls from 11 to 21 years of age. They have to, every 6 years they change office, and we're the advisor. She's responsible for setting up the program and what they're going to do for the year, a charity that they're going to have, and what fun events they're going to do. And it gives them some real growth in it gives them they're proud of what they do. It gives them a satisfaction, and I see it in their schooling, how these kids can become better at what they do because they start doing this memory work. And they all of a sudden they have to stand up and they have to talk in front of people. So when they do that, they just blossom, and you see it. I really notice it at Grand Assembly. When I go down and I see the girls as they grow up all of a sudden they're 21 years old and they're off to university, and it's really nice to see. And then I had the same thing with the DeMolay. I met with the DeMolay boys at their conference. Their yearly conference is kind of like our Grand Lodge. And I was heavily involved with the DeMolay, and the DeMolay made me an honorary Legion of Honor, which is position for work you've done to promote the youth. I also received my Grand Cross of Honor from the Rainbow Girls for the same thing, for effort that you put in and your help on there. So both of these organizations are great. We didn't know much about our connections with them until we formed the Youth Initiative Committee, and I convinced the Grand Masters to let me stay on. I think I served for 5 years because we had some growth in it. After my first year, I told the Grand Master, I said, there's a lot of Masons present, but they don't know we're there. I said, can we wear our aprons, sonic aprons, to their meeting so they really know? So Most Worshipful Brother Petrosar brought that out in his communications at Grand Lodge that we were going to be allowed the next year to wear our aprons. So that was the beginning of that, and it's been passed on from all the grandmasters since then. And it's nice because when you're there on the sidelines in your aprons and all the girls and the boys see you, it's they know where they're associated with, and then we're there supporting them and what we do for them. It's not only money that they need, but more than that, they need people on the sidelines, people to help them. They need adults. And this is where we need more of. They raise their own money. They do all their own fundraisings. And money is nice for them in little things they have to do. Our Grand Lodge gives $5,000 to each one of them every year. They give it to the DeMolay and the Rainbow Girls. Now, the Rainbow Girls, because they didn't have a charitable foundation type of a number for charity, we gave it to them for their what they call Camp Grundy, and they go away. And this pays for all the girls to go to camp, so it really helps them financially, so that they can go get together once a year with their advisors and have fun for a weekend away. So Grand Lodge is really good. And Grand Lodge also gives to the 4-H clubs, and they have different other youth and the Boy Scouts, and I think the Girl Guides too, that they also give money to. So, you know, they spread it around. Our money we put every year from our dues that goes to Grand Lodge, it's well spent, you know. People don't realize it. They always complain, oh, Grand Lodge has raised the dues again. But they don't realize really what they do with it. They're very, very, they watch what they do. Everything is taken care of. Everything is really, really accounted for. We have accountants going through everything all the time. So they don't throw money away. They really watch how they spend it. And we have a separate account, like I say, for our benevolence so that we have money to help them. The year I was on benevolence, I went around to all the lodges in our area and asked them, do you have a benevolence account? Do you have a way? And I would say three quarters of the lodges didn't have any benevolence fund. So when I finished that year, all of them had started a benevolence fund in their own lodges. And I know for us, we didn't have one at Thistle until I brought it out. And it's growing, and we've had to use it a couple times for brethren that were in distress. One brother lost his whole house in a fire and had nothing, no clothes. He didn't have a belt to hold his pants up. So that's where benevolence really comes in, and it works good. I served 11 years on the Board of General Purposes, enjoyed every bit of it, traveled all over, and like I say, masonry is the people you meet and the friendships you acquire. And my wife is the same way. She's still, every morning, she's on Facebook with all the people she's met in Grand Lodge. They have their coffee together at 8 o'clock in the morning on Facebook, eh? And they're all over. They're up north and in Niagara and around. So they just communicate what's going on in their lives and how it's going. So that experience was really, really well worthwhile. And that's about where I'm at there. Once I finished up with Grand Lodge, I was fortunate enough. The first year I was youth initiative chairman, I was asked to become a 33rd degree Mason in the Scottish Rite. And so I joined there in Halifax on my 60th birthday, September 14th, 2006. On my 60th birthday, I became a 33rd. And 5 years later, I was asked to become an active member of Supreme Council. That happened in Thunder Bay. And the Scottish Rite Freemasonry is just a concordant body of the Masonic Order. Masonic Order is your first, second, and third degree, and your Master Mason is basically the highest degree anybody achieves, no matter what you do other than that. That's still your highest degree. The concordant bodies have different sections where they go off and teach different philosophies of masonry. So with Scottish Rite, our Supreme Council, let's start this way, with our Grand Lodge, we're Ontario. We're Grand Lodge, Ontario, but with Scottish Rite, it's all of Canada. So our Supreme Council controls all of Canada. So being an active member, there's 33 of us in Canada that are active members, plus the past Southern American members. So we have the privilege of basically making the rules and deciding all what happens. And that's quite an honor to be a part of 33 members in all of Canada. We're quite honored here in the Valley of Windsor. We also have Reverend Gordon Maitland, who is our Grand Prior. So having two of us as active members is a really quite a step in masonry here in Windsor. And so we're really proud of that. And Gord's, of course, doing a great job for us. And now with an active status, we can only be an active member till we're 75 years old. Once we're 75, then we have to become a past active. We still can speak on any subjects at Supreme Council, but we don't have a vote. So that's basically how it goes. Now, after a few years after I was an active member, first of all, I was appointed as a Grand Sword Bearer as an office, and then I became, 3 years ago, I think it was, I became Deputy for Ontario. So the deputies for Ontario, there's four of us in Ontario because it was such a big province to cover it all. So I started out, I had Windsor, Sarnia, Chatham, London, and Woodstock were my valleys to take care of. Then there's a redistribution. Actually, there was only three of us at that time, and then they brought us on to four. And with that, I ended up with Windsor, Sarnia, Chatham, and I'd take Thunder Bay. So the last week in February, I traveled to Thunder Bay to for their Lodge of Perfection reunion and have a great time with the Brethren in the North. They're really hospitable up there. And when last year I went, it was minus 32 degrees, and there was 6 feet of snow on the level, and my plane flight got delayed a day because it was too windy to get back into Toronto Airport. They kept me well. I was in. So this is the collar of my office, of the office of those who are active members. It's 33 inches in length, and it has 33 chains on it to put it around. And that you have that whenever you have the office as you need to represent. And that's a parchment that you wear. So what else have I done?
You've done a lot. That's quite the CV between everything that you've been involved in from when you first joined. It's impressive going back to at the start. You're one of the few guys I can think of who's only done one go around in the Worship Master's chair. But you have, even outside of the Master's chair, how long have you been a secretary for?
This was just my third year. I was treasurer for, I think, a 10 or 11 year period back around the 90s. I was treasurer of our lodge. I've always been there every meeting.
I think sometimes one thing guys forget about or don't remember, pay attention to is they'll have the idea that, if they are a worshipful master or in one of those office chairs that they'll participate and they'll take part, but they don't really always see the need for them if they're not in a master's chair or an officer's chair. How important is it, do you think, for Masons, even if they're not in an office, to participate and to attend regularly?
That's the most important part of Masonry, is coming out to the lodge for the meetings to support each other. You need to support the new ones that are coming through. You need to be a mentor to them. You need to help them. And the nice thing is, after the meeting, is the fellowship. And half of Masonry is the fellowship you get out of it. That's where the most important part of it. Sometimes it can get boring when without your secretary. You're going to find that out when you have to read all those minutes over and over. Sometimes what's really nice is those. Sometimes when the master will ask the approval of the minutes, and somebody will say, "I think you made a mistake at this spot." Well, that's good. They were listening. That's great. Or I just read it wrong. But I think it's very important. I had a real surprise when I became a secretary. All my time on the Board of General Purposes and all I've done, I never read the Constitution as much as I did the first month I was secretary. I probably read that thing five times over and over, finding exact paragraphs, what it meant, reading it. Okay, what does it really say? What I have to do? And there's a lot. You almost have to spend every day at it. You have to go on. You have to see what's going on. People are sending emails of what they need. You have to remind the master, I need a message. What are you going to do this month that I need to put in there? You have to send things off to Grand Lodge. And if you need dispensation, you have to ask for it. And it all comes back to the secretary. And it's a big job. It's a big job. You have to want to do it. I don't think anybody should be put in that doesn't want to do it. You got to have the willpower and say, yeah, I'll do that for the lodge. But yeah, attendance. I have something that my wife always said to me, that I always came back from lodge in a better mood than when I left. And she was always supportive of me in lodge. And I think that's a big, big part of Masonry, is your wife has to be with you. Your partner has to be accept that fact and want you to spend the time out with the guys, And I think it's a very important part of life. We've done that together. She taught a lot of line dancing, so she did a lot of her stuff. And so we allowed each other to grow in what field we wanted to. And she's always been come with me on anything. We've gone to a lot of Grand Masters banquets all over Ontario, and when we have Supreme Council sessions, she's been all over Canada with me, and that's a big plus. You can't do it by yourself. You need your family, and you need that support, and that's always been a thing. My oldest son, Bill, he went on to become master, and then he became a district deputy for our Grand Lodge for. That was for Erie District. He became district deputy. I think he, at the time, was the youngest one at that time as district deputy. He's since gone through and younger son, Stephen, was his secretary, district secretary, and he became, most worshipful Brother Atkinson gave him the position of Grand Tyler, which was quite nice. So he is a very worshipful Grand Tyler, and he was the master. Stephen and my son-in-law Sean Fry joined the same night. They both joined together, and they followed each other through the chairs. And Sean was master first, and then Stephen. And so now Stephen is Sean. After 19 years, came back last year and assisted us as a master. And Stephen, this year, is going through, and he started out to help us as junior warden. So that's become our family is really heavily into it, and it makes a difference. It makes a big difference. And Billy, all three of his daughters are in the Rainbow. They all play hockey, and so their life is, I think they have about two nights a month that nothing on the calendar. So. Bill was fortunate enough that he became the Valley rep for the Valley of Windsor, and for some reason, because of his personality, he is who he is. Lester's brother George Benton put him in the line officers in the consistory in Hamilton. So he's been traveling to Hamilton for the last 12 years to attend the meetings and the reunions, and 2 weeks ago, he was installed as Commander-in-Chief, which is a real accomplishment when you think of it, because over the 50 years of consistory, I forget how many years he's told me, but it's a two-year term, so there's not that many people who have been Commander-in-Chief of Warsaw Consistory. For him to be one is a real honor.
A well-deserved honor. I was there that night.
Yes, you were. Yeah.
A bunch of us came down on the bus, which is always always a fun trip.
Yeah, it was good. It was so nice to look up and see so many people there. His was the first open installation, and so we didn't know how it would go over. But all the Rainbow Girls were there to see him, his accomplishments, because he's a part of the administration of the Rainbow Girls for Canada, too. So he's... that was quite nice for them. It was really good. A nice family night. That's what masonry is, should be all about, family, keeping the family together. And that's where it's our life. It's, you live masonry. Those who are true masons live it. And I think that's what makes it such a strong fraternity. Everybody has them same values. And they treat each other the same way. They look out for each other the same way. If you're having a problem, you can come to anybody. You can say, you know, you can talk privately. You can pour your heart out, you know. And people will talk to you. And sometimes you just need to talk to somebody. And it's nice to have that group that you can. As we grow up in life, I found that I've gone through different groups. Okay, like when I was on the fire department, I was a group. When I was travel team hockey, I was another group. And as you go in different things, you have different groups as you go. When I played hockey, that was different. I was a different group. So, and then, but the Masons were always there. They're always a group we really, really appreciated with. And the thing with joining at 21, I still can remember who the master was, who the brother that took me through were. I still remember all of them. Probably there's only one left out of that night that's still alive. So that's, and we commemorated him about 5 years ago with his 50th, and that was pretty neat. He really enjoyed that. So yeah, now we we're there to support the young guys and give them the mentorship. At Thistle Lodge, we're very fortunate that we have a nice group that are very family oriented and work together that way and help each other.
So you've talked a lot about your history. Do you want to send a drink? Yeah.
I just might. You're going to be a little water.
All right, well, he's doing that. I will keep talking.
I've been talking too much.
You have a lot of good information about Mason here. Well, he is getting a glass of water. I will show you guys this awesome Square and Compass Promotions mug, which are just $10 if you want to purchase one. It's great for your coffee in the morning, great way to support this podcast and Square and Compass Promotions. Also, if you would take a moment to like this video, to subscribe to this channel, it is, the more likes and the more subscriptions we get, the more people will be able to see this. Also, we are working on getting our Patreon account up and running, which means you can support us with donations of $10, $25 a month for exclusive content and bonus content and a lot of great things. And he is back. That was perfect timing.
Good, eh? How are we doing on time here?
What time you got? You're heading down to
Woodstock.
Woodstock after this.
Yeah.
This morning you're at St. Clair College.
Yeah.
So no rest for the wicked.
That's right, yeah. My wife says, see you sometime tonight.
We talked a lot about your history within Masonry and also history of the craft in general. You were on the 150th anniversary committee. Where do you see the future of Freemasonry? Is there things that concern you going forward? Are there things that you think are particularly that are going well for the craft that we can continue doing? What problems and also what opportunities do you see in the future?
Right now, Thistle Lodge, we're one of the few lodges. We actually have a family night every Friday night. And the wives, the kids, we bring friends. And we just sit around and socialize for a few hours, play some darts, and we have a big screen where the kids put up their movies, and they run around, they have fun. And we bring our people who are interested in Masonry, we bring them there first. So they come out for a couple of meetings. They get to know the brother of the lodge before they ever join, eh? And this way, when they do join, they're more inclined to stay because they realize what it's all about. And I think Masonry is coming into a good stage right now. Yes, just like everything else, there's less and less Masons in Ontario than what there was before. Myself, I think has a lot to do with the fact that it takes two people in a family to make a go. Both the husband and wife are both working. So there's a lot of care for children, there's a lot of activities for children. There's not a lot of time left over for Masonry for the young Mason. I find that our Masons that we're getting at Thistle are in that 40-year range, which is a good range because they're more settled in their life. They have the time now, and they're looking for that brotherhood that they can associate with. So I think we've had to change and adapt and move to which the environment we're living in is. And I really think that it's not that people don't want to be Masons, it's just they don't have the time at the beginning of their life until they get more situated. I still think we're in a good spot. As long as we keep up our beliefs and our morals, we'll be fine. We notice it's the same with the churches. The churches are the only people who are attending are the elderly now. The young people have found other avenues for their religion, for their beliefs, that they don't need to attend a brick building. Eh? And So the churches have to, I think, adapt a lot in their, what happens with them. So, yeah, I think we'll be okay.
What are some ways you think Masonry can adapt to some of the challenges you mentioned? So the necessity of a two-income household, not having the time when people are younger to get started the way they used to.
I think the thing is for the lodges not to force their new members to advance too rapidly. Give them a chance to come out and enjoy what they do between their degrees. And if it takes 6 months before they go to the second degree, so what? You know, let them come out and enjoy it. And when they get to be a Master Mason, don't have everybody pushing an application in their pocket to go further into the consistory bodies. Like myself, I was 25 years. If I'd joined one of the consistory bodies before, I would not have had the time, and I would never have accomplished anything in it. So, for me, it worked out to wait 25 years. But
I waited 10 years myself, and 10 years was a long time when I did join Scottish Rite. A lot of people were surprised that I waited 10 years before I joined. But my attitude was I always wanted to become proficient as I could in my craft lodge. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to wait until I had completed my time in the East the first time around, my first time as a master, before I would even consider joining a rite. And that's always the advice I give to guys, whether it's York Rite or Scottish Rite, or some guys want to join both, it's make sure you're proficient and comfortable in your craft lodge first before you consider going advancing.
And make sure you always support your craft lodge. That's the big thing. Keep coming out to your craft lodge and don't just go off into one of the other ventures and stay there. Your craft lodge needs you the most, and that's where you need to be.
Absolutely. Why is it you think that there is this tendency to for lodges to rush newer members either through their degrees or into officers' chairs or into rites? Is it a matter of, you know, like you mentioned, we have less Masons, so there's just more openings? Or is it a matter of lodges become concerned that if they don't push somebody through, they'll get bored and decide not to come out? Or do you think it's just nervousness on the part of lodge, making sure they try to get a guy into a chair before family life takes over?
I think it's a little bit of both. But I think it depends on the individual lodge, how long it's been since they've had a new member, you know, and because some of them, unfortunately, haven't had new members for 5 years, so they have no idea how to, what to do with a new member. They haven't had the experience. We've been very fortunate at Thistle. In the last year, we've had 8 new applicants. Our biggest problem is are we having too many meetings to get people moving through? I think it's averaged out well for us. We've done okay with it. And we leave it up to the new Masons if they want to pursue and go farther. They come to us and say, yeah, I'm at that stage. I'd like to go into an office. And then we go from there. But we don't go out. We're fortunate enough we don't have to go looking for them. Other lodges, if they lose them, they got nobody, you know? So, yeah, it's, should they do it? No. Do they have to do it? Yeah. So
it's always that.
It's a way.
That's the problem with the problems with life, right? There's always that between what you should do and sense what you have to do and trying to find that balance.
Yeah.
And Freemasonry can be the same way. Certainly, if you see, you know, lowering of attendance, then lodges will sometimes find themselves where they feel like they have to push a guy. Although my view on that is, I don't know how you feel, it's always been like if, you know, you need a worship master, you need a warden, you need a secretary and a treasurer, but, you know, there's a lot of offices that people can fill in for at last minute, or
yeah,
if there's a guest. So there's always a way to find a way to fill up a position without necessarily rushing somebody forward.
I'd rather see them come out for a year or two and get accustomed. You know, I think most of the lodges that do that will give them small parts to do in Greece, so they'll get accustomed to standing up in front of people, memorizing, and to be able to speak in front of people. And then they're less nervous. And I think that a lot of that helps by what we have to do to prove yourself in each degree. That's the start of it, eh? So, that really helps. Really helps, because all of a sudden you say, gee, I can do this. You know, this isn't so bad. I can speak. Like now, I have I get invited to speak at different events through Masonry. 40 years ago, I'd be petrified, you know, but I've been around enough and took my time and was mentored by a lot of people that I can do it now, and it doesn't bother me. It always bothers anybody. You want, am I on the right subject for this group or what I'm talking about, or how can I make this more interesting? But I enjoy the challenge now of doing it.
The challenge, keeping up with challenges is always, or challenging yourself is always important, and that's one thing Masonry has to offer. There's always an opportunity to challenge yourself, either with a new piece of work or with a new goal, number of lodges you visit or temples to visit or offices to take. So if any men are looking for a way to challenge themselves to grow, Masonry has that in spades.
Oh, yeah.
I want to go back to something you mentioned that I think is important, that Thistle Lodge does very well, that other lodges could learn from, is you have your family nights on Fridays. We talked about those family nights. It's really talking about your Masonic temple, where Thistle Lodge meets, as kind of being an extension of your home, right? You've got a TV there. You've got the kids can watch TV. You've got a hangout place and darts. It's a place where people are comfortable to just go and associate with each other.
Yes. And we probably don't even see that ourselves because we're accustomed to it. It's there. We've enjoyed that. But yeah, that's a good point.
How important is it, do you think, for Masonic temples to be, an extension of the home, a place where people are comfortable to go hang out and associate with each other, not just on lodge nights? Because so often it can seem like a temple is, it's open, the first and third Wednesday of the month for a meeting, and then it stays dark until the next month, and then over summer nobody's there. Do you think that for Thistle Lodge, has it benefited the lodge to have a welcoming temple where people
I think one of our benefits is we own our own building. We're just one lodge in the building. Financially, it's probably a little bit more difficult. Our dues are probably the highest in the area, but we have our own building, and I think being able to do what we want to do with our building is different. Where we have, seven lodges in this building, plus York Rite and Scottish Rite, and so we can't set us one little piece aside for our own. We have to, and it works okay too. You have to be able to work with each other. That's fine, but I think there's a certain advantage to having your own lodge and being able to just be able to come there whenever you need to and have something to do. Yeah, that's a big, big, big plus for us.
Windsor Masonic Temple does have, seven lodges plus York plus Scottish, right? All the lodges are terrific. We all get along very well, and we coordinate times for things like practices. But this building itself is so beautiful. I've always been an advocate of trying to make it more of a place where people are comfortable to come, even if it's not a lodge night, to associate with other Masons or bring their families or hold events. Like we had a haunted lodge room at Halloween, which the Rainbow Girls came out to, which I plan to do again in October 2020, and just making it a family place. I grew up in Masonry myself, so I remember hanging out at my dad's lodge for family parties and Christmas parties, and I think more of that is always good.
Well, at Thistle, and being there for 50 years, I've seen when we had a mortgage, all the money went to the mortgage, but we had Halloween parties. We had New Year's Eve parties. We had Valentine's party. We had square dancing. These were all fun events that we all came to, brought our friends, and we used that money to pay off our mortgage. And what happened is when we paid the mortgage off, which was the year before I was master, those things quit happening. And it was like, we need to owe money. We kind of got away from it. And I think that we went through a dark period for a few years where we didn't do it. We used to have bands there. We had everything. It was a different time of life, though, back in the 70s. It was different. There wasn't as many things for people to do. So we grew close to each other that way, though.
When you talk about, I think that brings up a good point. You didn't use the word, but I think what you're talking about is the danger of becoming complacent. You talked about you when you had a mortgage, when this lodge had a mortgage, and you know there was a real fire to make money to pay the mortgage, right? But once you don't owe that money anymore, how much of a concern do you think complacency can be for Masons or Masonic lodges, both in terms of where things are going well? There's this idea that things will always go well, so people become complacent, or if things are maybe not so good, people get the idea that, well, it'll always be this way. And it can be hard to motivate guys sometimes to get out of a rut and try different things or new things.
Complacency is very, very it is a problem. It is a big problem. Just like you say, it's if we can't get complacent in doing our work, and maybe somebody reads a part, and then you start going down, down, down. You need to have high goals, strive to keep those high goals, and keep working for them. Yeah, complacency can be a problem, very much so. And I've seen that happen in a lot of places. It can happen in your work environments. It happens in your churches. Things are going great. So we don't worry about it until it starts to fall apart, you know. No, you've got to keep on it all the time. Yeah, you hit that. That's the right word. Complacency is a problem.
Now, I know that you have to run to Woodstock, because, like we said, no rest for the wicked. Before I let you go, the last question I'll ask you, because I think that, you know, you mentioned you got to have a goal. To avoid complacency, to prosper within Masonry, or just in life, whether it's work or church or wherever it is, you need to set yourself high goals. What goals do you have moving forward? We're filming this, you know, January 25th, so just started 2020, so it's always a good time to think about this stuff. What goals did you have for yourself in Masonry, or if you were... you know, had a magic wand, what goal would you set for Masonry moving forward?
That's a tough one. What goals? I found through the years that I didn't put myself in a place to advance. Other people put me there. They're the ones that suggested, okay, I think you should do this. I think you should do that. It happened to me. I forget which part it was, but I remember. I think it was a part of Grand Lodge, and they were. I think it was whether they were asking me for Grand Lodge or asking. I think maybe it was the 150th, and I was talking with Right Worshipful Brother Don Wilkinson. And he gave me the best advice I've ever had. He says, don't let the opportunity go by. And that's always stuck with me. If there's an opportunity, take it. See where that door opens to something else. And he was one of those persons, him and Right Worshipful Brother Bud Jackson, were my mentors, and they're responsible for where I've gone, where I've been. Because they directed me, and they put me in positions where I could improve myself, but also show others what I was capable of, and learning more about myself, what I was capable of. And so people will put you, if they think you should be someplace, they'll direct you in that direction. That was a, I don't think that answered your question, but I think I wanted to say that.
That's a good answer, right? The goal maybe for Masonry, which sir, I think this is a problem, so I think you hit the nail on the head, right, is one of the goals is making sure when opportunities present themselves that Masons and Masonry takes advantage of them and not let them pass them by, whether it be, you know, maybe running a bit late on some technological advancements or not using our temples to their fullest capabilities sometimes, you know, the way Thistle uses their temples for family nights, right, making sure we take advantage of those opportunities. You know, because people get so busy, because two-income households and all the things you talked about, maybe there are sometimes opportunities, you know, come up that we don't always take advantage of as quickly as we could.
There was an article I was reading, and it said, there's no such thing as I do not have time. You always make the time for the things you want to do. And I thought that one hit me. I said, wow, that's really accurate.
I agree 100%. I think that's a great place to leave it to get you on your road trip. Make sure you drive safe. I know the weather's supposed to turn.
Just hope it doesn't turn cold and freeze to ice.
Knock on wood for you.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Cameron.
Thank you
so much. Best of luck to your broadcast. I'm glad you brought us into the next century with all this new technology, and I think it'll add to Masonry's, the betterment of Masonry, not in our area, but all over, and I hope that it works out great.
Thank you so much. Well, with Masons like yourself, such esteemed guests, that's the hope, right?
Yeah. Okay.
See you guys.
Bye.